Hello, this is Auntie Bee's Knees with your business report for the week of October 20th. Activists around the world have been celebrating the third annual International Media Democracy Day this past week, but you wouldn't know it by turning on CNN or by doing a search on Google News, where the only item that pops up is a short announcement for an event at the Vancouver Public Library. In fact, the mainstream media has tended to ignore the movement for media democracy altogether. Why? Maybe it's because democracy involves diversity, participatory decision-making, and accountability, qualities in which the mainstream media are sorely lacking. In Canada, the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission, or CRTC, oversees the ownership of media and imposes regulations meant to ensure fair competition and diversity of ownership. These regulations include recognition that Canada's broadcast airwaves are public property, the use of which is monitored by the CRTC. Nonetheless, Canada's public airwaves are gradually passing into fewer and fewer corporate hands. In 1998, the CRTC announced changes to its commercial radio policy. In markets with 8 commercial radio stations or more operating in a given language, a corporation identified as a quote-unquote person in the new policy would be permitted to own or control up to 2 AM and 2 FM stations in that language. In markets with less than 8 commercial radio stations operating in a given language, a person would be permitted to own or control as many as 3 stations operating in that language, with a maximum of 2 on any one frequency band. The legislation was tailored to allow large media companies to buy out small, independent, unprofitable radio stations, and the policy has worked. Within 4 years, major Canadian media corporations like Chum, Rogers, and Corus have acquired the licenses for dozens of new stations. Most of these stations are modeled after pre-existing success stories in other markets, so that the radio band has become like the Trans-Canada Highway, with fast food media franchises popping up across the country. Currently, Chum owns 29 radio stations in Canada. Rogers Media holds 43, most of which are clustered in major cities thanks to the CRTC's 1998 legislation. The Corus Entertainment Group didn't even exist before the new policy was passed. It used to be the entertainment wing of the Shaw Cable Company. Now, Corus is Canada's largest radio operation in terms of revenue, with 49 money-making stations across the Great White North. Standard Broadcasting is Canada's largest privately held radio business, with almost 60 commercial stations across the country. Thanks to the CRTC and to Standard, today you can hear the same easy rock music on nearly a dozen easy rock stations across Canada. But apparently, the new regulations have not gone far enough for Canada's corporate media kingpins. The Canadian Association of Broadcasters, a mouthpiece and lobby group for the private broadcasting industry, is urging further consolidation of Canadian radio as a way to make Canada's radio listening market more profitable. If this seems gloomy, the situation for newspapers and television in Canada is darker yet. Thanks to Canada's long-standing tradition of campus-based community radio, there are many more radio stations and radio companies in Canada's major markets than there are for other mass media. Most of Canada's news is delivered by the hands of only 2 media giants, Canwest Global and Bell Globe Media. Canwest Global is the largest daily newspaper publisher in the country and runs the global television network of 17 local and cable television stations. Bell Globe Media owns the nationwide CTV television network, one of 2 national daily newspapers called The Globe and Mail, and internet service provider Simpatico Lycos. And yes, CTV viewers are subjected to a barrage of commercials for Simpatico and for Globe Media's parent company, Bell Canada. In December 2001, Canwest Global issued a directive to its newspaper editors, stating that the editors would be expected to run 3 editorials per week reflecting the position of Canwest's owners on political or social issues. The decision was met with a spate of criticism, particularly after editors were told that their own local editorials should not contradict those from corporate headquarters. Strikes and resignations ensued at Canwest papers across the country, culminating in the firing of Russell Mills, publisher of the Ottawa Citizen, after he ran a series of stories and an editorial critical of the administration of Prime Minister Jean Chrétien. Since that time, 2 inquiries have been underway by the Canadian government, exploring the impact of cross-media ownership and media consolidation on journalistic integrity and public accountability. The Canadian Senate's Committee on Transport and Communication and a House of Commons Standing Committee on Canadian Heritage have come to conflicting conclusions with regard to the impact of media concentration on Canadians. The Committee on Transport and Communication is eager to pursue further deregulation of the broadcast market, allowing corporate media profits to rise. The Committee on Canadian Heritage is concluding that the increasingly concentrated ownership of Canada's media outlets has had a negative effect on the availability of diverse and relevant media in Canadian communities. Those familiar with the consolidation of media in Canada argue that the U.S. should look northward for lessons on what loosening cross-ownership restrictions means for journalism and culture. The U.S. Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, allows ownership of up to 8 radio and television stations in a single local market. The FCC barred companies from owning newspapers and TV or radio stations in the same market in 1975, but over the past several years, America's major media corporations have pressed the FCC to lift this restriction. Their wish came true when the son of U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell became head of the FCC after the 2000 presidential elections. Since taking on the position, Michael Powell has led the most sweeping overhaul of media ownership rules in recent FCC history. This past June, the FCC voted to relax its rules governing media ownership. The decision sparked an outcry and mass mobilization by citizens across the U.S. On September 17th, the U.S. Senate rolled back the rulings. But the move doesn't help to diversify the media landscape in the U.S., where Clear Channel, based in San Antonio, Texas, now owns more than 1,200 radio stations in 230 cities and has annual profits of almost $1 billion, five times what's made at Chum. Many of Clear Channel's broadcasts are fed at central locations far from the cities where they are heard, saving Clear Channel considerable money by disposing of the expenses related to the distribution of vibrant, relevant local news and music. In response to Big Brother trends in U.S. broadcasting, the FCC passed legislation to allow a slew of low-power FM licenses in January 2000. The move was partly a strategy to control the spread of unlicensed pirate channels, and partly a way to find airtime for relevant community programming, after the 1996 Telecommunications Act deregulated radio and set the stage for a decade of intense media consolidation. Under the legislation, low-power FM stations would be squeezed between the frequencies of existing full-power stations, with their licenses granted to non-commercial organizations for educational purposes. When the FCC first opened its window for applications for the low-power licenses in May 2000, 720 applications were filed. But by this time, the American National Association of Broadcasters, the U.S. private broadcasters' lobby, had raised concerns with Congress about potential interference from new low-power stations and asked that the minimum distance between two frequencies on the dial be increased. More distance means fewer low-power stations. Congress complied with the broadcast industry's lobby and requested further study on the matter of low-power FM licensing in December 2000. Knocking more than half of the original low-power applications out of contention and virtually excluding low-power stations from congested urban markets. The results of the independent study requested by Congress were released in July, concluding that the majority of interference issues voiced by the National Association of Broadcasters were without merit. In August, Michael Powell told reporters that the FCC would expedite the approval process for new low-power licenses, but the agency is not currently accepting new applications and has not stated when it will again. As you can see, the media landscape on this continent is a dire mirror for the spread of corporate largesse and shrinking public space. It's imperative that we work to preserve and strengthen those outlets for independent and critical thought that remain on our airwaves. In the U.S., community-based low-power and pirate stations rely on volunteer efforts and donations from listeners to keep their distinct and dissenting voices on the air. Here in Canada, a network of campus community radio stations under special license from the CRTC depend on funds raised by volunteers, students, activist groups, local small businesses, and listeners to stay afloat in the turbulent sea of media mega-mergers. One of those stations has been making waves in Toronto for 20 years, but can only continue to do so with contributions from people like you. Give to CKLN 88.1 FM's annual fundraising campaign this week and help to keep Annie B's Knees buzzing. To find out more, visit www.ckln.fm or call us at area code 416-598-8810. That's a wrap for this week's Business Report. Signing off, this is Auntie Bee's Knees reminding you to put your money where your mouth is and invest ethically.